We're coming up to a quarter to seven, and I do want to talk about the internet. Now, it forms a kind of connection point for billions of people absolutely every day. And there's this idea that it is a global experience for everyone. How accurate is that? I mean, does someone's individual internet experience in, for example, Australia, differ fundamentally to one that's being had on the other side of the globe? This is where the notion of the splinternet comes in. Now, Terry Flew is Professor of Media and Communications at the Queensland University of Technology. Professor, a very good morning to you.
Good morning.
Now, tell me, has this idea of the internet being a truly global experience always been a bit of a myth?
It's always been a myth in the sense that it's been recognised that it's not quite the reality, but it's also been something that people have aspired to. So if you looked at some of the very early manifestos around all the things the internet was going to do, it was going to lead to the dissolution of nation states and the formation of virtual communities no longer separated by geography or, you know, beliefs and so forth. Whenever anyone said that, it was always pointed out there were definite exceptions. China was the most obvious exception, that China had always taken the view that the internet was a form of media and media was under the control of the state. Now, you could say China was an exception, but it's a pretty big exception, being now about one-third of the world's internet-using population. And over time, there has been a growing pressure, partly coming from governments, but also partly coming from communities themselves, for there to be greater controls over what is on online, whether that be around issues of offensiveness or whether it be around harassment. There's always been the issue of copyright infringement, for instance. And these issues seem to be multiplying over the last few years to the point where, for the big platform companies such as Google, Facebook and others, they're moving towards a world where they're finding themselves dealing with very different rules in different territorial jurisdictions.
And it sounds like what you're suggesting is it's not just government law, but also some very around a lot of cultural differences as well.
Certainly, certainly. The big one here has traditionally been concerns about offensiveness in Islamic countries. And going back some years, when there were some very large protests around the world by Muslim communities around a short film on YouTube called The Innocence of Muslims, Google made a deliberate choice to geo-block that into 13 countries. And to a degree, geo-blocking has been happening for quite a while. We don't see it.
Although we're a little more comfortable with it in Australia at the moment, I think. Or familiar with it, perhaps?
Yeah, we're perhaps familiar with it. Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of geo-blocking in Australia relates to copyright questions as much as personal morality.
Look, there's often a suggestion that much of this difference comes from governments not keeping up with technological kind of changes around the internet. Is it a government's role to keep abreast of technology, or is it the technology platform's role to understand the laws that it's enacted in?
There's two things going on there. The first is whether these big platform companies are tech companies or media companies. I should say this issue arises in part because the vast bulk of activity we now undertake online is mediated through platforms like Google, like Facebook and like others. So they're not the same questions that would arise with email.
Okay, yep.
So the point is that these are communications that are happening in public spaces. And the traditional tech company argument of, well, you know, we're just the tech company, we provide the service, we don't have any accountability for what happens on the service, is washing less and less. In the same way as, you know, Uber said it's not a taxi company, it simply, you know, links up drivers and passengers. Clearly these are companies that, you know, have become behemoths on the basis of that connectivity. They've always had very curated platforms, if I was to put it that way, that one of the factors has been advertisers have been relatively slow to go to migrate to the internet, partly because of concerns about what sort of content their advertisements will be sitting alongside, which is, you know, clear with a medium like television, but not with Google search. So that's raising the question of whether they're media companies. And on the other side of the spectrum, what's apparent is that any claims to have effective media policy and regulation and the sort of principles that underpin them need to take account of the online environment. That, to take an obvious point, about 20% of Australians now have streaming services at home, Netflix, Stan and others, and there are some questions there about whether those services or platforms like YouTube have any obligations with regards to Australian culture, Australian content, children's content, those sorts of questions, which, of course, the commercial broadcasters, who are no longer in quite the halcyon days that they once were, make the point, well, we have these regulations, but the new providers don't.
Some people suggest that this increasing fragmentation that the SplinterNet seems to imply is actually a cause for alarm, but is it just a natural progression of what we've already seen happening?
It's certainly a move away from what we once hoped for with the internet, that the internet, you know, had the potential, and still to many respects does, to give us something along the lines of a global public sphere where, you know, if I want to, say, understand what's taking place in Turkey, I have ready access online to a variety of Turkish sources, not simply ones from the government. And obviously other parts of the world want to get a diversity of views on what's happening in Australia, for instance. So those opportunities have always been there, and there are definite inconveniences arising from all of these checks and controls, as any of your listeners who've travelled to China would be aware, that they've, you know, clicked on to try and do a Google search of something only to find it times out and they need to go to Baidu, and those sorts of things. So there's issues, you know, for the point of view of users. There's also obviously issues here from the point of view of the companies, that there's larger costs associated with meeting all of these compliance issues. But you'd have to wonder if they've bought some of this on themselves, not least around the very sensitive political issue of whether these companies pay tax in the countries in which they operate.
Now, just finally, there's always an argument that says that consumers, users, however we want to term internet people, will find a workaround for this sort of stuff. You know, we saw in Australia the rise of VPNs when we were told we couldn't have, you know, the streaming service we wanted. Apple recently got slapped on the wrist for selling VPNs via an app store into China. I mean, if we genuinely see a giant fragmentation for SplinterNet, are we just going to see maybe an increase in deep web presence for people to get beyond their borders?
Yeah, possibly. There's always been what you might call a lead user who can circumvent restrictions. And just as technology tends to run ahead of the law, the ingenuity of internet users tends to run ahead of governments. So, to some extent, many of these controls come to be symbolic, but they nonetheless also perhaps give a signal around what's considered to be acceptable or unacceptable. But they certainly do create problems. I think, for instance, around the blockages on using YouTube on school computers.
Interesting.
You know, and people simply come home and you access the same thing on their parents' laptop, you know.
I do. Professor Flew, we'll have to leave it there, but thank you so much for your time this morning. Fascinating
topic.
All
right. Thank you.
Thank you. Terry Flew there. He's a professor from the University of Technology, Queensland. Talk about the concept of SplinterNet. Some very interesting take on it.